also then identified land in Johannesburg, which is being used as at the moment it's got mining rights. And by virtue of securing such pieces of land, one has therefore an opportunity to utilize.
You said one land by
Transnet,
the other one
by? No, both pieces were acquired by from Transnet. Yes, one is in Swartland.
Yeah.
One is in Johannesburg, and the one in Johannesburg is got mining rights. And the acquisition of such land is that, given the plan of the mining company to obviously explore the things over 10 years, we're able to rent that out, and thus we're able to generate revenue from those pieces of land. And obviously, municipalities in those instances couldn't have identified such land as suitable for their own use. But then, as a means of ensuring that there's continuous revenue generation streams in order to sustain the activities of the agency, one thought that not only should we depend on municipalities to identify land for urban development, but other strategic acquisitions for later use, whereby one is able to generate revenue in order to manage the cost of holding and rates and taxes, security and all those. Then one obviously wouldn't have gone through the municipality. Now you also have a situation in Swartland where we've acquired 700 hectares of land. Where there's an opportunity again for communities. We picked that up not through consultation with municipalities, but by our understanding of the breaking new ground concept, where the very piece of land has got some bio plants which are going to be requested that the communities should rather use the opportunity that is there to them in order to preserve those indigenous plants. So the opportunity again is not looked only for housing development, but part of it obviously will be used for housing development, but part will be used for sustaining the community itself. So that would not have been identified by the municipality in general. That is why we think it's not only should be a decision that will lie in the hands of a municipality, but the broader government at large should be involved in this decision. And then when it comes to also the land which may be acquired by the agency, although the agency is permitted to acquire, hold, develop and release land registers of the state in the state or any state organ, which is prepared to dispose of the said land, the process is still subject to Section 4. The said Section 4 must accordingly be broadened to include all spheres of government, including entities owned by national government and provincial government. I'll explain that. That's the provision for Section 5, Paragraph 4, or therefore to be completely disregarded. And then coming to the functions of the agency. The agency seems to be dependent, again, solely on agreement with municipalities for any activity that it seeks to do. Thus, it excludes, again, relationship with provinces. One, at the moment, is saying, provinces are there to render some services. You've got provinces owning properties, and such properties need to be managed. You have an instance in some of the provinces where there's currently renovation. There's no proper management of the state-owned assets yet. In terms of the Occupational Health and Safety Act, the responsibility for managing such properties rests in the state land. And in order for one to be able to begin to allow the agency to be self-sustainable in terms of own revenue generation, and we think, therefore, that some of the functions and the roles should include property management on a broader spectrum. Therefore, one will also be able to serve the provinces and municipalities at that level. And then with regard to the funds, therefore, the widening of the scope as proposed, one believes that will allow the entity to engage into the self-sustainable mode and not solely relying on the grant from the national government. That it will allow one to move promptly as and when land acquisition opportunities come across at any time without having got to wait for the fiscal to release funds for the such acquisition? I think those were just our two, three comments, Chairperson. In other words, we didn't have much problem with the bill itself. Okay. I happen to know there's a province at the moment where there's renovation of properties, which have been, of course, in a dilapidated condition. Now, what is happening is that the department, through its limited capacity, has allowed the community, the residents of a particular block of flats that is being currently renovated, to manage the very property themselves. And what happens there is that there's no proper collection of the due rentals, there's no issuance, timeously so and consistently so, of the bills to show that the person is basically liable. There's no oversight to make sure that there is no continuous subletting of the properties. And there are many other activities that relate to the property management, like looking at the state to make sure that these properties that are government-owned do not go to a point of being dilapidated and therefore costing more, and that the continuous collection of the rent, therefore, will allow for the payment of the rates and taxes from the revenue being the rental that is paid by the tenant. Because at the moment, mostly the grant that is used, that is given to the provinces, is the one that is used to pay for such rates and taxes, as opposed to the revenue that is required to be collected from the state-owned properties being used to pay for such things, due to the people not paying for such, but then also due to limited capacity, the oversight in terms of making sure that the continuous collection is not happening. Thus, we believe that opportunity is therefore available to provide for that oversight through the agency. So it's property management as ensuring that it becomes a sustainable human settlement by ensuring that we're collecting rent, we maintain the property.
How are we going to do things differently? Because we have the same problem in the MCD.
No, what I'm saying is, due to limited capacity, opportunity is available for somebody to focus on the particular activity. Because the functions of the various departments at the moment, their core focus is on housing development and not necessarily property management. So we're saying if the agency could be given also opportunity, because we have some skill source in some of the entities which are going to be closed down, and therefore in order not to lose jobs, we will propose that such functions be made available to the agency, and therefore use the current skill source that we have. Okay. All right. I understand that there's a problem in entry gateway. But what I'm saying is, fine, yes. But the question comes, do we have a section that will come up with specific strategies to make sure that people understand the need for the payment for such services, and for therefore allowing the entity to provide oversight in terms of maintenance of those properties, payment for the water and electricity usage as a cost recovery that is required by the municipalities to make sure that they continue to deliver the services. Now, what I'm saying is that the departments, as they are, largely, their focus is on housing development, meaning that it's putting up the top structures and laying the necessary installation of services. But where they own the properties, there isn't a core focus on providing a solely focused oversight to make sure that there is that management of the properties that are owned by the state. Yes.
Members
paper.
In submission, basically tells us that we must widen the functions of the proposed development agency. We must include property management. We must include, or the scope of the services needs to be broadened. The whole purpose, as far as my understanding goes, is that this agency is supposed to focus on delivery of housing, which certainly needs to be expedited and improved upon. So for me, the submission is going away from what we're trying to do, and I think the presenter rightly said that the focus has been on delivering houses and not on collecting rentals and profits. Well, I must admit, I'm very disappointed because we passed the social housing bill last year where we're proposing that a lot more rental housing will be provided. And therefore, municipalities and provinces should in fact focus on that part of property management separately. They do currently own rental property, and they're hopefully going to own a lot more. So they should get that part of the jacked up in their own right. I don't believe that the agency function should in fact go that far. We're looking at unblocking the problem to get housing delivery freedom. So it's almost a direct contradiction. Then, Chairperson, I think the mention was made of clause 5.4, and Greg yesterday did say that it's one of the amendments that we're looking at taking out of the proposed constitution. So there I would agree with you. And also you mentioned the lack of consultation with provinces. Again, I think that's useful input because I've identified that myself. However, I must say that it is certainly my view, and I think one of the presentations yesterday, that rather than broaden the function, we should start narrowing it down so that it focuses on the bottleneck. And if there's any other areas that need to be addressed, it needs to be addressed outside of this agency. But thank you nevertheless for the presentation.
Thank you,
sir. Actually, I'm actually just about to be covered by saying
the comments are welcome to. When I made a comment of the sealed laws, it's because of one understanding that the formation of the HDA is obviously going to result in the cessation of the existence of CEPCON and perhaps another entity. Now it's in line with the restructuring program. Now the reason I brought the aspect of property management was to say if opportunity is available, of course, let's make use of it. Otherwise, fine. If of course then we're looking at the Social Housing Foundation as a tool. It's all right. It was just our own input to say we have other skill sets which can be used to allow the agency to also have other avenues of revenue generation and using the current skill sets. But if the committee feels no, the Social Housing Foundation bill as it was last year is in order, we do not have a problem necessarily. It was just our input, but obviously it's either welcome or not, and if it's not, we will also accept. That's precisely why Chapter Sunni took the opportunity of saying, as and when one is given the mandate by the cabinet, you can only operate within that mandate. And it so defines and tells you this is how far you can go. Now, to a point of going outside the directive thereof, therefore you perhaps would not be complying with what you've been tasked to do. So we thought by taking advantage of the bill and perhaps proposing inclusion into the mandate of this function and activity, it will allow one to explore, therefore, the opportunities that are out there in terms of ensuring that that is being managed. So the reason why it's not being done and being basically engaged upon by CEFCON as an entity was because it's not within the mandate of CEFCON to go out into this function. But we're saying, given that there's a gap, perhaps, we thought we would put it forward, therefore taking advantage of the bill. But otherwise, it was just an input, not from the perspective of saying we wanted to secure the jobs for people necessarily, but saying this is what we've identified and we're bringing it forward. Because our understanding is that it's not going to be effect of people being taken and put into the agency per se. But it's a closure of a company and a formation of a new company. And the new company will decide in terms of its requirements, if it takes skills from the existing 20 entities or not. It's not going to be an automatic migration. So that was our understanding. Yes. So we're not covering necessarily to say we are protecting, we're being dishonest and trying to secure the jobs for the people. But we were putting it to take advantage of ensuring that it's being included in the mandate.
Saying that in terms of the present combination of the bill,
mention and sort of like doing Naruto as possible, because at the end of the day, it must stress that it was
divine.
All other functions can be done by another entity else.
Okay.
Presently, one of the things that I see is the power, and the game must be exactly that, the agent must be exactly that. So, to clamor is for property management will be equivalent.
Thanks.
The other issue that is coming out very clear in terms of the issue, you are worried about the things to do. I think you are on record and speaking the department is saying that. But in terms of things to do, the things that the department has now, whether that is self-cost, whether it's the incubator, wherever, they will ensemble these things. But we said that the ACA, so the yes. But if you do help the department to ensemble within the ADA, people are not sure from it. So that is the very mind that people are in all the things.
Yes.
There is no way that we can encourage shelter than
yes.
Only those skills that are really needed for the ADA that will be able to do the same.
That is well understood, Chair. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're also just taking, you know, we looked at the source of funding for the agency. We looked at the cost of land. And one wanted to say, what other avenues are there to revenue, to create greater revenue, to allow for mass acquisition, of course, on the areas of need of these land pieces. So some of these were thought about by that thought process, to say, yes, you do plan to acquire land over such and such period. But we know that the property market, it goes, you know, the incremental, the cost of land increase is not necessarily staggered in a absolute percentage form, but it can rocket, you know, just in the, through the mode of change of things. So it was just a thought to say, perhaps just look at other revenue opportunities to ensure that there is a mass acquisition of land pieces using other revenue sources, and not solely relying on these.
Okay, just in the interest of clarity, it's my understanding that the Circle's mandate is a right-sizing agent that comes to an end a good couple of years ago, and that they currently, or certainly last year, was meant to be this special-purpose vehicle, particularly to look at sourcing land. What is your mandate at this moment?
That's what we're doing. We are basically, we've acquired a piece of land from Transnet. And then what we're busy doing at the moment is we're facilitating land availability agreements between the Department of Housing and the Department of Public Works for availing those land pieces.
Well, Chief, in terms of their mandate. So, you know, I certainly, again, fail to see why we need to then broaden the function of the agency to include the other things. But I mean, we discussed it earlier.
The reason why, for example, from Transnet, the land was costing us 228 million, which entails some of the very suitable piece of land. But we could only get land worth 57 million. And if we had other revenue forms, we would have taken the whole stock. So that's one was thinking to say, obviously you can't just take money from one entity, take it to the other one and file land. So if you have your own revenue source, you're able to explore the avenues of land acquisition.
Okay, what you see then from the presentation of that follow-up is on the committee in terms of the new entity. How do they acquire revenue? How do they generate revenue in terms of acquiring of that land? Do you think that headache to the ADA itself? Because at the end of the day, if you're talking about acquiring of land, you must know exactly how you acquire that land. So Servcon's experience in terms of short form, in terms of funding, has come up with ideas of generating that sort of revenue. I don't think it's our place to deliver it on that as we speak. But it's obvious that in the manner that we give to the entity itself, they must be able to create ways and means of acquiring them, including generating revenue.
thanks for Richard. I mean, just on the issue of funding, the whole attitude is that where funding comes from. Appropriations, Parliament, donations, contributions, the approval of the minister, interest in investments of the agency. So there's a whole range of areas here that are actually covered. Mm-hmm. Now, your third point of saying to us that what is contained in the Section 24 of the bill, this contains the Constitution. I just want to give us some information.
Okay. You know, when we look at the services that you can render, as you stated, other forms of services that can be rendered to municipalities, that on its own was limiting. To say it's only services that could be rendered to municipalities. There are other forms of services that could be rendered to provinces, which were not necessarily included in those fund sourcing. So which we think should also be included. To say that other services from which could be rendered to provinces should be included in that. Sorry? No, I'm saying, as an example, there's from the source of funding, it was only services that could be rendered to municipalities, and it excluded services that could be rendered to provinces. But also within the services that could be rendered, we can only render services within your mandate.
I don't seem to understand what Greg was saying. Greg was saying that in terms of the bill,
Yes. The ones that are included now,
yeah,
you won't be able to render services to provinces, and therefore you can't generate revenue from provinces.
So you can only render services
to municipalities. Yes.
I see what you say.
May I ask that the presenter give us, certainly by next week, due to the experience that they've now got in the acquisition of land and the maintenance or control of it, if they could give us very specific amendments that they propose to the book, if they could forward that to us by next week. Based on your experience, what do you believe should be added, deleted, changed, whatever?
Okay.
If you could let us have that, we'd appreciate it.
All right.
Okay,
I was going to say, just in addition to that, they had an extended mandate now. Perhaps they would like to give us some sort of summary of how successful they've been, what kind of challenges they've been, where they've made changes, and so on. Just to would be helpful for us to get an understanding of how successful they've been in that particular. This would really pass on for us.
Should I respond? I can't respond. Okay.
Greg, I'm sorry, not asking you to say it now.
No. It's fine.
But when you do your presentation, when you do your proposal to the committee in terms of the amendment, you include the kind of success story that you've been having. And the challenges and the blockages.
Okay.
So that it will enable us as the committee to be appropriating this year to be able to incorporate some of your concerns in the future.
All
right. Is that all right?
That's fine then. Yes.
Is there any other thing that you want to say to us?
No. I'm fine. Thank you.
You consider the first community.
Members
are asking you to ask me, was there any report that has been made by Self-Con on this new mandate?
No.
On the new mandate, not as yet?
No.
But members have had an opportunity to engage with Self-Con. Remember, we had a public hearing.
Okay.
But that does not mean that when you're giving that community to abuse, you cannot take that for what you're asking to do.
All right. Okay.
Can you go back to the department? Do you want to say anything to the you can't be silent. What are your observations?
Thank you, Chair. My apologies for the late arrival. Ma'am, I think the submissions wouldn't necessarily in themselves reflect the experience that CERCON has gone through. And I think what I just wish to reiterate is that the purpose, the reason CERCON is fulfilling these land acquisition processes is simply because it was a stopgap measure. There isn't capability to acquire, hold that the land that we've been targeting. So I'm just appealing to the honourable members to appreciate that in the context that what CERCON is doing is only for the interim in the lead up, because that's the understanding that we are rationalizing the institution. But you cannot say because I've got a problem I build an institution. You have to address the problem, and for the interim that was the mechanism to address the problem. And those experiences members will be favored with in terms of what worked. And it's still early stages, very early stages. It's only 1,000 hectares that we're talking about at this point, just about. But there is more. So I would want to just reflect that, just so that the members appreciate that as part of the evolution going forward. That there was a gap, and rather than stand back and say we can't do anything, we then allowed the CERCON's mandate to just extend to attend to that gap, just so that we can in the meantime process those land parcels that were made available to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I was listening on the issue raised. I think the second one correctly is the issue of ensuring that we don't make the agency I think probably there would be obviously differentiated understanding of how government has structured the solution to each of the key problems. For example, it would be, I think the committee members can suggest too, problematic to actually make an institution that is to this particular. Which itself is a broad enough mandate to include the other tokens that are otherwise managed to specialize arrangements like that in Randa. And even within Randa, they are specialized and segments, and they are not managed the same way within that case. And on top of this, government priority isn't to say it's to deal with certain parts of that market segment, differently from the other parts, because government. Looking at assisting for social reasons and not rather to use that to make profit more than something else. And I think we should keep to that principle. And that would, in fact, from other factors, you find a situation where there would be complaints of crowding out private sector initiatives in the end of the month. If you push that, then you might have a movement that you think. And I think the best document is around the issue of to focus on those things that are fine to get the public to get in what are the proposals that you're coming up in terms of these amendments? If those proposals are coming up, because we will engage with the department. You must remember the one who comes from directly to CEDCOM into the legislation. It comes from CEDCOM, and we as a committee will engage with the department. And so that, in what form we will change the proposals, that is the
rule. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, we thought we'd focus on the substance.
Okay, that's fine.
Chair, just in relation to Section 3, we asked the question, if the agency is acquiring land on behalf of municipality or provincial department, will the land be registered? The problem with this is that you have additional costs in relation to those aspects.
Okay.
And that in itself is one of the major problems at the moment that one experiences.
The registration
The on registration. So the agency will then acquire the land, register it, and when it develops it has to then transfer it. And it's a whole bureaucratic process. So I think the issues are that you also get then bogged down with some of the legislation. The other question which we need to ask is, why is the municipality land prohibited in the bill? I think it's indicated that at the time of the enactment of the bill, municipal land will specifically be exempted from acquisition. Our approach is that if it's available and it's suitable, and some of the municipal land is suitable, and one would have to consider perhaps why that is so. Because I think in terms of IDPs, the municipalities do include and identify those lands. In relation to section 24, it says the funds of the agency consist of fees rendered to municipality based on cost recovery. Now, one of the issues we're asking here is, for example, in the acquisition of that, is this going to be an additional amount, or is this going to be funded through the subsidy? Our experience has been, in essence, yes, sometimes we've indicated that, but there has not been sufficient allocations made. So what happens is, these amounts get taken out of the subsidy. For example, a good example you have now is, for example, project management fees, and that affects the actual sort of ability to be able to provide in terms of cost. So it's just an issue. The other issue in relation to the acquisition of land that we've raised is the question of the bulk services, the costs associated with bulk services and provision. Because we find in a lot of instances the state does have land, municipalities do have land, but there's a whole range of issues that prohibit development of that land because there's bulk issues. And those bulk costs are not funded from national. Perhaps maybe MIG does provide it, but it's specific. But you have the municipalities then having to provide the MIG. I mean, the bulk infrastructure. So even if the agency does procure the land, there's the issue of bulk infrastructure to allow that land to be developed. And perhaps we might want to consider an amendment that indicates that there will be funding available for bulk infrastructure. Okay, then I think that the last point on the first page is the question that what about the income category 3,500 to 7,000? Will the agency be allowed, or will it in fact, in terms of its developmental focus, allow for that category to be? It's unclear, and perhaps, you know, sometimes what happens is that when it's unclear, these things come at a later stage and you get different legal interpretations. I think the issue that we said that municipalities be allowed to contract with the agency on a program to program basis, because that is welcome. I think the one issue that needs to perhaps maybe fleshed out is in the funding, and it's gained the funding, in relation to the equitable shares, either through MEET or the housing fund, depending on accreditation. What is the financial arrangement? Is it going to come out of the equitable shares for the provinces, or municipalities in the event of accreditation being implemented? And specifically at the metro level, you've got the capacity that has been developed, and I think that's an issue that perhaps in the process of being rolled up, we would have to be sensitive around those issues. The other question which was not included here but which has come up is, The bill is silent in relation to provinces. And the point about it is that we've seen those kinds of conflicts arise between national and province. And I think if the agency is going to be dealing with municipalities, then we need to ask ourselves, what is the role of the provincial MECs going to be? And I think if we don't deal with that's probably a source of conflict, and it must be addressed. So in the interaction with the municipalities, perhaps we would want to include a proviso that says there must be some provincial interaction or support. and that's in also in relation to the question of IDPs, the acquisition of land, specifically in metropolitan or municipal areas, should be done consistent with the integrated development plan, because then you might have a situation when in certain instances agencies come acquire land and there's no sort of consistency with the integrated development plans of the municipality. Thanks, Chair.
Members, that is the municipal input. It is very clear.
Yes.
Very, very clear. And I think it would be better for us to deal with it on those issues that have been raised systematically.
Thank you, Chairperson. The thing that comes to mind, when I listen and when I read this presentation or this submission, it becomes obvious that Ekurhuleni, for example, are in favor of such a vehicle. But they lack information. They lack detail. And that's where the question comes from. Now, Chairperson, looking at the bill and looking at the submission, this was submitted once again to the department prior to the bill coming being tabled in Parliament. And my question, like yesterday with the Banking Association, is this. You've got a lot of question around detail, because you're uncertain about a lot of things if you do enter into some agreement. What was your interaction with the department after you submitted this? Because you seem to have the same questions you had then, which leads me to believe that very little interaction took place, and once again, very little of what was submitted was in fact transferred to keep clarity in the bill. So my question really is to the department, but I'd like to hear from the presenter in terms of their responses to this submission before it was tabled in Parliament. Thank you.
Mr. Sorry.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to ask a different question. The Ekurhuleni Metro is obviously quite feasible and feasible. Mm. In terms of their experience, how do they see this proposed or this housing development agency assisting the school again? How do they see this bill when it's passed? How do they see this actually having an impact in terms of housing delivery in the community?
Thanks. Chair, just on Member Stain's point, we have had interaction with the department. I think, perhaps as I indicated as a preface, maybe I should apologize if this contained too much of detail, but I think what we focus in on is after the bill came in, we need to tighten and strengthen some of the issues. For example, the provincial interaction, that's not covered in here. One would have to look at that. And I think we've had interaction with both provincially and nationally. But perhaps maybe at the time of the submission of this, I think when this was submitted, the bill had already been drafted. So I think the issue is for us to perhaps, and I'm not sure what the process is from now, to tighten that. On Member Schneemann's point, I think for us as a municipality, based on the experience, we're saying that the agency is a good thing, based on the fact that it is focused, and it is focused on a specific mandate in relation to delivery, then that's a good thing. Because I think what we found is that we all fall in over our feet in relation to the housing delivery process. And one of the things that municipalities want to be developers, provinces want to be developers, and national wants to be developers. And we're saying that's best left to national and province. And if it is done through an agency, then that's fine. But as a municipality, we want to focus on the planning and the developmental aspects related to housing delivery. Because I think that's where the essence is. As Mr. Leshebane will indicate, Ekurhuleni is, I think, probably the first municipality where we are servicing SAMs, you know, informal settlement, you know, upgrading water and sanitation through the MIG. And we've asked province to focus on the house construction. And that allows a clear demarcation of roles, and we don't fall over our feet. There's no conflict, there's no situation. And I think, yes, there is a problem in relation to delivery, but I think what we must understand is that we found that sometimes state entities get bogged down again in the bureaucracy, they get again bogged down in the red tape, and one would have to look at, for example, on the land issues and development issues, what are some of those experiences that we've had to be able to fast track land development, like for example provincial exemptions, giving the minister power to look at exemptions in relation to some of the PMFA requirements. When I say that, I'm not saying that we need to do away with the compliance issues, but I think there's, for example, specific areas where one would have to look at that, because that's an issue. Like for example, we found the implementation of the financial services charter. You cannot implement that because you've got to go through a tender process. Now it's a chicken and egg situation.
Okay. The whole.
Okay. I would like it to let me put the burden up on the issue of land, maybe on the issue of acquisition of land on their part. Their experience maybe they could share that with them.
Okay, perhaps the last response is pre-entered my next question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Ekurhuleni is involved in a few fairly major developments and has been. Where has your bulk infrastructure funding been coming from for those projects?
Okay. I'll take the first. On the land acquisition, Chair, what we've done is that we did a proposal for 4 years ago. 5 years ago we did a proposal call, and that proposal call was consistent with what we term our migration plan, our entire sort of housing plan, and there was land identified strategically. So people made proposals for the availability of that land. We've done feasibilities with the provinces, and we've in certain instances been able to acquire it. What has happened is, and I think this is an issue that one of the problems you have as government is that you've got to do a feasibility before you purchase. So we take the risk as state. We do all the feasibilities, the geotechs. We've had 4 pieces of land. Once the geotechs, the EIAs have come in positively, that's been onsold to private sector developers at a huge profit. So our experience in acquisition of land, which I think is not different to anyone else, is a bad one. There's a huge amount of profiteering. The state processes in relation to compliance with the PFMA, that's the issue that I raised. The PFMA, the question of the MFMA, it demands of us we have those feasibilities before we purchase the land. But because the private sector doesn't have to abide by the same rules, they can be a little less compliant in their business dealings. I mean, there's numerous examples in Ekurhuleni, and Ekurhuleni is probably one of the areas now still where there's an amount of land. We've had to expropriate land. An example is, and we've had a judgment given against us where we've been forced to purchase land last week, 2 weeks ago. We're going to appeal the judgment because the judge forces us to buy land which we say occupied, but we said we're prepared to purchase the land if it is suitable. It would be fruitless expenditure if we didn't do that. That's some of the challenges that the rules we set up that we have to play in that hampers us. From the bulk infrastructure, where it is for subsidized housing, we funded that through MIG. But that comes through MIG as well as some of the council internal funding. But that is catching up on us. And I think perhaps maybe in relation to this, there needs to be some alternative funding mechanism within the housing sector of funding for bulk, because that does hamper the speed of delivery as well.
Thanks. Is there any question from the department? Can't be silent, listeners. Okay. Yesterday we had a presentation from the Banking Association. One of the areas that they've raised was the fact that the coming of the HDA would be crowding out the private sector. And to us it was a bit of a problem because we thought the cutting of the HDA was actually crowding in the private sector, because the understanding is that it will galvanize support, because they will acquire land, and in the building of houses, they don't want to build a house on their own. They'll have to contract with some people to build the houses. But it looked as though there was that kind of a dilemma that we are confronted with presently. What is your view on that?
So there's one question you need to ask the Banking Council. Are their members developers or financiers? Because that's the confusion at the moment. You've got two banks that have set up development arms. Now, and that's why we're saying that the Housing Development Agency is a good thing, because it basically says this is what you're going to do. Yes, it's a reaction, because I think the problem is that the private sector as well also needs to understand that its conduct has not been sort of without criticism. So if one would then respond, one then has to ask the banking sector, why have you set up development arms if you don't want to compete with the private sector? Why criticize government for that when you yourself are doing it?
Because the concern that we are having is that, of course, the private sector, they're going to build houses, banking, whatever. But their category is not the category that the government is looking at. The government is looking at low-income earners, okay? They are saying that they would assist government because of the inclusionary bill. But if you look in terms of inclusionary bill, we're talking about only 20%, even less of what the private sector is developing. A portion of that would be given to the low-income earners. But if you want to have economies of scale in terms of low cost, then you need an entity that could do that.
Yeah, I think, Chair, the other question that comes that I was going to ask you, then we need to ask ourselves, how many private sector developers are involved in the 3,500 category and below? And we're not talking about the commonly used term emerging and those kind of things. No. Where that happens is either through sort of pseudo project management or those kinds of alternatives. So the question is, yes, in the 3,500 above, you'd have that situation. But in the sector that we're having to deal with the biggest problems, there's a huge gap. And
can I come back? You want to come? Yeah, sure.
Thank you. Thank you. Page 2 of the document, the last paragraph, it says that the bill is supported because the utilities are not compelled to make use of the housing development agency.
Hmm.
Now, therefore, my question then is to the Kudalini Metro is under what circumstances do they see themselves using the housing development agency? And do they think it is it's better to leave it as is? If you leave it as is, where it says the citizen is not compelled, what then is the use of the housing citizen act? Does it really have a role? Municipalities may feel no, and we can do this thing better. So I just want to get some, you know, just understanding as to why they think it should remain like, or why they think this is the correct approach.
Chair, when this was drafted, there was the assumption that accreditation will happen. Now, if you're going to accredit municipalities, then you're going to have capacity built in municipalities. And we know that you're going to have to build capacity in the Housing Development Agency. Now, would it be a wise thing to do that? You build a capacity in the Housing Development Agency, and you're going to build capacity in municipalities.
Mm.
We're saying we all need to sit down and agree.
Yeah.
This is our role, and we've taken some step towards saying that as a municipality we will follow the Housing Act. And it's clear, I mean, the Housing Act is quite reasonable in that we do the planning, we prepare and assist with the services and the development, and the Housing Development Agency together with the province. I mean, that was the assumption, and I think it would have to have some kind of political administrative consensus that we don't sort of have this kind of obsession that we all want to do the same.
Can we give the department to engage with the presenter, particularly starting from, I will show you basically recording what they were saying, the issue of registration, the transfer, the exemption for acquisition, why the municipal land has been exempted, the exemption of obtaining municipal land, the issue of project management fee, I suppose, as far as subsidies are concerned, the parking services, and the category they're talking about, 3,507,000. So those are the areas that I think are critical that we need to have answers to. Yes, I'm putting in the spot, but it's critical that we're in this.
It's in order. Thank you.
Okay.
Madam Chair, the point at which the land of the land acquired changes and also by ownership is concerned, it has been a matter that is being raised from several quarters to say, are we going to purchase, is the agency going to acquire this land and at that point take transfer of the land, or is the agency going to secure that land through some arrangement, say land availability agreement or otherwise, such that sterilizes that land from availability in the market, but then for purposes of development, it processes that going forward. Clearly, there are pros and cons in that, either way. In that, if that land is transferred immediately, and the agency prepares that land and then brings it to a stage of ripeness, and then houses are built, you are then transferring that land eventually to the end user. Why then take multiple transfers? So there are considerations either way, and whether one will legislate that is another thing, or it becomes an operational policy within the HDA itself. Those matters, ma'am, there are strong views either way, but I think what seems to be amazing is that, especially where state land is concerned, whether province, national, or municipality, it should be possible for those arms of government to agree to not necessarily transfer ownership, but rather to allow for the school, it will be negotiated and agreed arrangement between the HDA and whatever state entity that is, or state that left free of government, to allow for the agency then to proceed and process that land.
it may be problematic, Madam Chair, to legislate around those sort of things because context may vary. But it's not reflected in the bill because I think from where I'm sitting, clearly it becomes one of those models of operation, and those choices get made. If you look at that, Sandral and so forth. So there are many options in that regard. But I'm sure the operational model for the agency will attend to that. I am not. It's actually comforting to receive the input that the minister is making so far. Why are we exempting, excluding absolution of municipal land? And I think it opens that space, and I think there's been deliberation yesterday as well. So we welcome that. Insofar as the possibility or avoiding the possibility of eroding the subsidy by loading this fee on the subsidy, I think that's again a consideration that is welcoming that. Clearly, the land acquisition arrangement, for some time there's been a portion of the grant that is made available for land acquisition. And that is what the agency will use. And that is why we're also providing that the agency can be used or contracted by other departments, your land affairs, for example. There are resources for land acquisition, but under specific conditions. So all of that will the agency will access. But I think the principle that is raised is that the phases that the agency is rendering should not be funded out of the subsidy fund because it will erode the reach of the subsidy. And I think we are not necessarily opposed to that. Just the reference to provinces becomes important, very important, and I think the submissions there are self-explanatory. The one thing, let me say, that is being raised and hasn't been provided for in the bill relates to special exemptions for the agency. In respect of compliance with certain provisions. I would submit that while it is critical, it has to be carefully constructed. And I'm saying carefully constructed in that while the outcome is desirable, to say you do not want the agency to be bogged down by these matters of compliance as though the agency operates for different ends other than what those legislations are seeking to achieve. So it may well be that it is possible, and I'm sure the specific areas of exemption will have to be looked into. And I think on the one hand, the questions around the MFMA, I mean, how municipalities can alienate land assets, for example, specifically provided for in terms of the regulations under the MFMA. And therefore, it may be that those are some of the areas that exemptions will have to be secured. Now, how that is done, I'm sure the drafters can still advise accordingly. But it would be a healthy arrangement, Madam Chair, if part of the objective is to accelerate housing development in this regard, given the size of the cycle. So I think those special measures accompanying the HDA would be welcome, and therefore we may need to explore them going forward. I'll pause there, Madam Chair. Bar the one area that is coming up, this question of the private sector being crowded out or in, I think we just need to be very specific. Because if you look at the housing delivery value chain,
from land availability and acquisition, insurance, debt, to preparation, feasibility study that has been referred to, right across to installation of bank services, other connecting services, demarcation in terms of standard property development. We have to be clear, where is the private sector going to be crowded out? Is there that concern in that delivery chain? And I think it's just, we need to steer away from the sort of fear tactics as though the agency has other objectives other than what they are taking. There is a gap, clearly there is a gap. And therefore, that's the gap that we're seeking to plug. And therefore, I'm just concerned that if there is no specification as to the area in the delivery value chain where it's specified that the private sector will be started out. I'm still trying to see where exactly
at what point
is the gap right now.
There are two areas, perhaps, Mr. Jabandu can come in terms of that 3,500 category 7,000 and the issue of the equitable share where the municipality contract by contract basis, where would that come from? Remember?
Yes. Chair, I thought that the clause that is being, I think the way that Danny has had the presentation, is in our mind providing for a party-to-party agreement. At the time when you enter into when the agent enters into an agreement with the party, they will define them. If, for example, it's a function that falls squarely under the housing, the conditions and the mandate of the housing plan, obviously, with the province, they would define that and commit on the basis of that and define how it should be changed. If it's a service that relates, that is ordinarily defined underneath, they will enter into that sort of agreement. We're looking at the total human settlement packages. And therefore, we left it so that otherwise we would have to define until, and if next year there is another service, type of service that is developed, we then have to put it in. And I think we left it
deliberated
to define that it will be in that case. So, the 3,500 to the
7,000.
Yeah, that's another one. The one where the bank contributes a certain amount under this, the finance link in something. Now, if a municipality typically is doing a development and it will have it on a mixed basis, mixed income basis, in line with, or even accommodating the principles in the inclusion of housing arrangement, if in a PPP arrangement, because it would require that you have a PPP arrangement, or you would have to define those areas which will be developed for this purpose. Because in this case, the NG, under the informal settlement upgrading program, et cetera, the principle is that for non-qualifying people who are otherwise are within a particular development, you have to cost it and they have to raise a loan that includes everything. And government will then to both pay for it on that basis. Because those people, in terms of the program, are partially funded. Below 3,500, they are funded by the school.
100%.
Above, they are partially funded. So the municipality or the project manager in developing, or the developer in developing the program, will then have to do a proper costing of that because they need to recover on the sale of the product, which is paid for by the bank as well as covered from the money that comes from the government. And they told us that. That is an assumption that you can't really legislate for. It's an operational model.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that is subject to the operational model which must be developed by the agent, sometimes working with the municipality.
Can you
hit
with that?
Is that
Yeah. Tambuza, followed by Mr. Singh.
But I think whatever they would like to work around, but they must not think about the compromising their accountability requirements. Because if you talk of PMG, it's not compromising because that is the whatever this cash, one of the funds that are coming from the National Trust Fund. Because if we look at this big deal, it's going to the two funds that are associated by Parliament. So, whatever they do, they must not think about that. They can work around it.
Over to you.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is to the department as well. I noticed on page 14 of the bill, you give a list of people that have made submissions, which is essentially the people that have, you know, over the last yesterday and today appeared before the committee. Did you not specifically speak out comments from SAGA, for example, because of the impact that this could have on municipalities? Did the department not go out of its way to get a submission from them? That's the one question. And the other question, the question of accreditation was raised. Is it the intention that if this agency is up and running, that the accreditation of municipalities will sort of be phased out, will stop, will not continue? I have some clarity there. Or will they continue with accreditation even if the agency is up and running?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the question. I think we just need to clear the space in this special presentation. All things said and done, accreditation addresses itself to the distribution of the powers and functions in this special how you develop. Because the Constitution does provide for assignment, delegation, so of functions that are either in national or provincial municipalities. So accreditation provides the means. So it's not material in respect of the agency on the by and large. Because those powers and functions in themselves, wherever they are at any given point in time, they do not affect the workings of the agency. Insofar as SAGA is concerned, I am aware, Madam Chair, that at its National Executive Committee meeting of the 13th and 14th, I think, of February, one of the working groups of SAGA, I think it's the Municipal Services Working Group, and had a previous two-day workshop just looking at the implications of the
issue.
I had the opportunity to present what is envisaged in so far as the case is concerned. Several municipalities from across the country were involved in that. I am aware that the NEC of SAGA, I think that's the 13th and 14th of February, adopted a certain view. So whether it's the intention of SAGA to make direct submissions or otherwise, I'm not certain, Madam, because SAGA sits in the national, in the MIMEC anyway, where these matters were agreed to through the MIMEC. So, but my understanding is that SAGA is not opposed. There were issues that relate to specific workings, and some of which the municipality is raising, some of which other stakeholders have raised. So I am not certain, Madam Chair, whether I can, with a fair level of authority, say what SAGA should do with this view. But I'm aware that they've engaged fully with the bill, and there are views that have been recommended to the NEC. But they are not entirely opposed.
Yes, okay, I'm sorry, Lily. I don't believe my question on the accreditation has really been answered. What I'd like to know is the intention that accreditation will continue, even if the development agency is up and running?
Yes,
Because there is a direct impact. I mean, this agency is being established to assist where municipalities can't. So if more municipalities are accredited, it means that it does have an impact on the functions of the agency. So the question really very simply is, will the accreditation continue? Will there still be a drive to seal up the metros and get them accredited so they can continue with it? Or will that be eventually stopped so that the agency does most of that work? I just want clarity. Will the accreditation process still continue?
Okay, Mr. Chabane, what you are thinking, let's give the Kurulene a chance.
I think the issue of accreditation, I think everyone assumes that accreditation equals development. And I think the accreditation process would mean different levels of capacity. I mean, I think in our discussions with, for example, I'm just going to use us as an example, with province and national, we've said we will go up to a point and do what we think we can, and what we can't, what we can do, we'll be accredited to do, and then the province and national takes the responsibility for that. I think that's the issue. You can still have the agency, and you can still have accreditation if you want to. For example, the planning issues, the preparation, because I think then that allows municipalities to do that.
You can also go up to development.
You can even go up to development. Mm.
Okay.
Yes.
Over to you, sir. This issue is covered.
Madam Chair, it may be that the from what to is submitted to the commission.
Yes.
Really, those powers and functions, they will remain wherever
they are.
Whether through accreditation they shift or otherwise, that is why I keep saying that in itself has no bearing on the agency, because the agency will still have to interact with the authority holder at any given point in time in respect of the
website. Whether accredited or not.
Yes. So there is no intention or otherwise in respect of the agency and accreditation. That has not been made. That connection has not been made. But what we understand is that insofar as land acquisition and release, that whole purpose of the agency, clearly there is a gap across the system as a whole. So even if we shift the functions around, that gap still remains. And therefore it will need to be addressed. So that is why I was saying, unless I'm missing the target of the question, my understanding is that the agency and methods of the distribution of powers and functions, they are unrelated, because the agency will have to interact and interface with the authority wherever it is addressed, whether it's national provincial or local. Thank you.
Okay. I think what you are reiterating is what we spoke about yesterday, the need for the agencies to be cross-cutting. So irrespective of whether a municipality is accredited or not, there will still be a need for the agency. So can we leave it at that? All right. Unless you've got something to say to the committee, I think members are satisfied with the presentation and will engage with the department accordingly. Is there any other thing that you wanted to share with us? Members, are we through with Ekurhuleni? Criticize.
No.
Thank you very much, sir. Okay. But I think what Mr. Spain said about the Salga and other municipalities stands, we feel that in terms of the bill, the drug trafficking, it's only Ekurhuleni which is reflected. And yet it has a bearing with all other municipalities, and there's no word from any one of them except Ekurhuleni. It would have been better for us as a committee if there would be presentation from Salga, written Salga.
Mm.
So we would be satisfied that municipalities have been interacted with. So I think we would definitely have a situation where we have to, as a committee, call Salga to engage with Salga before passing the bill. so that we satisfy ourselves that this matter has been dealt with SALGA. But we accept what the department has said, that they did engage with SALGA. But now that it's not written here, black and white, the public opinion is that would say that SALGA has not been consulted. So with that, we will have to interact with SALGA. Yes, sir.
Actually, I was just going to say, I mean, if you look at the terms of persons controlled, it states that the bill was published for public comment.
Yes.
So it's quite interesting.
But they did not respond. Yeah.
Because they would have received that.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that they haven't been fit
to respond.
So I'm not so sure if it's up to the department to go and ask them to respond.
No.
I think it's for us to find out.
Why?
So
why not?
Maybe they don't feel that they need to comment, if you cannot.
Yeah.
Chair, and it must be also assumed that we undermine SALGA. A comment was sent to the department as well as to SALGA. So
okay.
The fact that we are.
That's very important. We accept that, definitely. Thank you very much. Members, there is that entity which we didn't meet with yesterday called Middle, the Middle Villagers.
They're here.
They're here.
And I need the upper to upper one.
I don't know where the lower and the upper. So can you go to the village? Yes, sir. Yes.
Okay.
Okay. There's no tea. I can't take break for tea. I don't see any tea. Oh, do you want to break for tea? No. Okay. Oh, sorry. The majority says no. So, that's your minority. Go over to you. Oh, the presentation is J. The middle, whatever.
Major in control. J is.
The last one. The last one. Yes, we are with you, sir. Tell us who you are, why you are here.
My name is Michael Kotsohan, the founder and the president of Middle Village Community Representative Council, established in terms of Section 31 of 1996. I would like to apologize for not availing myself yesterday. Due to a financial problem. My presentation is just as a summary. Written presentation number one, companies registered under Section 21 companies may be appointed as a housing development agency to do the job on behalf of the state in terms of Bill number B1-2008 and must be the historically disadvantaged individuals and must be supported or supporting the Constitution and its Bill of Rights, Section 26 of 1996. Number two, may form a strong working relationship with interested community-based organizations working for the people at the grassroots, including community communal property association established in terms of the CPA Act 28 of 1996 of Department of Land Affairs for land management on behalf of their members to develop a strategic plan with regard to identify and acquiring land for residential and community development, including Section 21 companies within the local communities. Number three, the Housing Development Agency can assist municipalities in dealing with housing developments that have not been completed within the anticipated project period with the financial assistance, but it must be agreed in the Equality Court, and the Housing Development Agency must be provided with the full information by a ward councillor on behalf of the local municipality or Department of Housing within that particular municipality before the financial assistance can be offered to assist the local municipalities for completing the housing project. And community-based organizations will always monitoring the process to be a success. Number four, housing development agencies may assist municipalities with the upgrading of informal settlements by offering some of the jobs to Section 21 companies to accelerate the pace of service delivery in terms of housing the nation. And Section 21 companies to be funded directly by the Housing Development Agency. But municipalities should be informed about that what type of housing development to be implemented for the residents in that particular area. With those few words, I would like to thank you all.
Thank you very much, Sir Person. I think we need to thank the village, Middle Village, because according to the presentation, it's clear that they are representing the community. Why I'm raising this? Yesterday we have asked from the department the participation of stakeholders in the act. It's not specified the role that is going to be played by the stakeholders. So I think the department is being given a homework to work around that. Hence, we have also raised it yesterday. But I wanted to know, check from the presenter, why are they specific about the interaction with the ward councillor? We agree that there has to be that interaction instead of interacting in an institutional level, let's say the municipality per se, but they are specific, they are facing the ward councillor. Why are they so specific? Thanks, Sir Person. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to thank the presenter for having taken the time to do a submission. And I take it that they are in favor of the bill, but that, I don't see anything there that says that you're against this bill. You're really just setting up some conditions almost that you think should be taking place, but that should not necessarily be reflected in the bill.
And according to the president, that the value they have to offer, it's okay to on service delivery. Isn't that going to retard the progress? Because mostly, because of the PhD, when people don't get any remuneration, they start resenting. That's not that.
Next is to Bhutanian.
Yes, madam.
Yes, you.
Yeah. I'm very.
Well.
No way.
The
about the communal property association. I think it's a very important issue that has been raised by the central village. Then, which means it will open up now for the traditional leaders now if they bring in this. Because I don't see them, how do we leave them behind in the whole thing when there is housing developed in their own areas as well? Because why can we just focus on the evidence? If we, then it's very important.
If the prosperity is over, I will be interested. That's prosperity.
Thanks, Commissioner. Thanks for this presentation. I'm just commenting on the last paragraph, because it talks about the fact that the municipality should be informed as to what type of development will take place, etc. And I just wanted to say that our understanding is that current public participation processes, the way in which municipalities go about and interacting with communities and so on, those are not going to fall away. I think that's the concern that's being raised here, is that possibly this housing development agency will just parachute in, do its thing, not consult, anything like that. And I just wanted to say that give the assurance that certainly, I think as a committee, we would have a serious problem if that was the way in which the housing development agency was going to operate. And that's not our understanding, that all of those processes normally take place, where communities get consulted, where ward councillors get informed, etc. Those are not going to fall away. So I just wanted to make that comment. But just as a matter of interest, I'm just wanting to understand, where is Middle Village? Is that an area? Is that a particular community that it looks after? I know it's just from Gume. I see there's a postal address here. But I'm just trying to understand, because just helps us so that we understand, this is welcome and this type of input is welcome. One of the problems we have in Parliament is Parliament still takes us and it's far away from other areas. But just maybe give us a bit of history about Middle Village. Thank you.
Middle Village is not an area, but it's an organization. Whereby, according to our vision and mission, in the near future will be something national, if possible. We want to sell this idea to other areas so that we can cluster. And, raise our concern with one big voice, something like that.
Where is your office?
Where are you situated? We've got a member in Hebron and Soshango.
How many members do you have? Do you have a board? Do you have a committee? How do you operate? Do you have a constitution?
For now, we've got a policy. We are now busy with the constitution, the whole constitution. Last thing in the function.
Okay. Do you know about your member of parliament in that area? Yes. Your MP? Do you know your MP?
No, not really.
In the national parliament?
Yes.
Yeah, not
visible.
No.
Don't take it to parliamentary constituency office.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the office of parliament is there in your community.
You know, members, truly speaking, I am still
What's the relationship with the civic organization?
In your community.
Sanko, we differ some way.
When people come before Parliament, they really benefit some.
Yes.
After they are visited from Parliament, they will get in touch with their members of Parliament, and when they go back, they are strong.
Yeah.
That's the reason. But we are happy with your engagement. Yes. So it's very rare that you get people from community to reach the community. And yet, the community, other than the stakeholders, that's what the laptop or whatever, is presentation for the community. We also encourage people, even they come with other presentations to the community, we encourage community to come before the community to talk. Because it helps us when we do the presentation. So we are happy that we come here. Thank you very much. And we also happy there was a person from Nyanga there, but unfortunately they are sitting out, they didn't want to speak. They presented their return submission to the file. We touch it and submit it to members.
Just to inform the presenter, is that both of us we are displayed there.
When we asked Mama Tabuza say that, as in the kitchen that this morning, that we said when we were trusting the group, it's critical that we say all relevant stakeholders should be consulted, so that the participation approach that we have in government is not lose sight of because of HDA. So those community-lizing officers should continue and interact with our community. And I think that's why the members of the community, like, they are concerned. In 1988, we lived there. We are proud in the past. So we definitely going to be engaged in them. Thank you for coming.
There's an end.
Remember, that is the end.
No,
there's a hand.
Yes.
Thank you,
Madam Chief.
Our presentation was supposed to be made by Sango Chairman, when the community has a connection with Sango.
Okay.
We formed a partnership with the provincial government, but our presentation was all members of the government.
Okay,
fine. Thank you. Thank you for the position.
Oh, okay.
And this is the deputy chairman, he's supposed to have taken the position of the chairman.
Oh.
We thank all of you, and we thank the department for having availed yourself right to this session. Also, we also have a link and back up. We thank you for being here. We hope the customer of the presentation will be very helpful. We thank all of you for being with us today. And we hope we will meet in something in the future. Because the process from here is that different parties will engage with this presentation, make their own position, come back to the portfolio committee so that we can have the only position. And thereafter, we will deliver the position. But thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. At the ground floor. Now, 12 o'clock, oh, there's a lunch already there. I think it's going to be a good flight. 90 plane, those who don't
I'm going to come.